Well, welcome to the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast, hosted by the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter. I'm Dave Austin.
And I'm Kurt Frankum.
Wow. We hope you're all healthy and safe during this incredibly difficult time. We've been doing this podcast for about a year with our monthly luncheon speakers. And due to the crisis that we are currently in, we want to change it up a little bit. We want to start a new guest series called Voices of Hope.
And we know a lot of people are suffering right now, and whether it's physical, emotional, or economically. And our hope is to bring you guests who can uplift, inspire, and have honest conversations with us. And we'd like to have guest interviews on a somewhat regular basis, maybe even weekly. Let's see how it works out. And hopefully this can help us all get together and be through this and get through this.
So we've chosen for our first guest to be Davis Smith, CEO of Cotopaxi. Davis, thank you for being here with us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to be here with the two of you remotely.
Remotely, that's right. Davis, how are you doing, both personally and how's Cotopaxi as a company doing right now?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. You know, I'm sitting here in my basement, in a guest room in my basement. You know, I've got four kids at home, and my wife, I don't think she wants me, because I'm like constantly on calls and videos, like probably like the rest of the world that's listening to this. And you know, I basically have been shunned down to the basement so that I can stay away from them, and I can you know, basically have a little bit of quiet while I do these calls. But yeah, you know, my family's happy and healthy so far. We've actually been in our house for about 2.5 weeks, probably like a lot of the rest of you too, and just trying to last through this time. And then as far as the business is concerned, you know, this is a challenging time for us, honestly, but it's been really kind of a beautiful time at the same time as a leader and as a team, to kind of see the team rally together through challenges. And, you know, we're trying to learn as much as we can through this process.
So, Davis, I mean, just in general, like, obviously, nobody can really prepare for this completely, especially as a business leader. And so, you know, with this new approach to running a business, and especially a retail apparel company, I mean, what surprised you about just how you've been asked to lead through this crisis?
Yeah, you know, I was actually in Ecuador 3 weeks ago. I was visiting with some of my team, some of our impact partners. We do a lot of work with nonprofits in Ecuador, where I used to live as a kid and as a teenager. The name of our brand, Cotopaxi, is from a volcano in Ecuador where I grew up. And it was really cool to be back down there. And but I was there for about 3 days before I really started seeing everything was unraveling with this crisis. And I cut my trip short, flew back, kind of emergency flight back. The next day, our team was all working from home. We shut down our retail stores. Our retail partners like REI and, you know, 500 other retailers around the country have all shut their doors. And so we saw, you know, it, 1 week things were normal. We were having record sales. We were just feeling so great about where we were, feeling very optimistic about this year. And a week later, our sales had been like tremendously impacted. And, you know, we had to make some, you know, some very quick and tough decisions. I fortunately had been running a business. You know, I started my first business out of undergrad, so in 2004, and I was able to lead a business through the financial crisis, the Great Recession, about 12 years ago. And that was a huge learning experience for me. And fortunately, I was able to kind of dig back into the cobwebs of my brain about how to respond. And so we, you know, we made some pretty quick decisions. On Monday, over 2 weeks ago, we actually cut our entire payroll by 10%. So I had an all hands meeting where we all dialed in, and I gave everyone kind of an update on the crisis in general. Gave everyone an economic update that Goldman Sachs had shared over the weekend, that weekend, and just trying to help everyone understand where we were at as a country and as an economy, what things were potentially going to look like moving forward. I gave an update on the business and how over the previous 4 days we'd seen an impact, a pretty big impact on the business. And I just told everyone, I am nervous. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty. and I worry about you and my team. And I told them, I promise you a few things. I will put people first. I will not be afraid to make hard decisions. And I will be honest and transparent and communicative with all of you. And I said, the first thing that I've decided to do is to cut our salaries by 10%. And this is in an effort to minimize the impact on individuals on our team and try to collectively impact as few lives as possible. And it was a big ask. But interestingly, a week later, I use a tool called Office Vibe, which basically gives us a pulse on the company culture, on sentiment. I can cut the data in a bunch of different ways, by department, by gender, by age, by seniority, by tenure, by all these different things. And it was really interesting. There's a question around satisfaction with compensation. And interestingly, the satisfaction of compensation in the last 2 weeks has been the highest it's ever been in the history of our company, which actually shocked me. I did not expect that. But I think it's reflective of kind of what we're seeing, where people are like saying, hey, these are unprecedented times. Let's work together to try to figure out a solution that impacts as few people as possible.
That's incredible. You know, Davis, I met you for the first time about a year and a half ago at the BYU Management Society annual conference. And since that time, you came and spoke with our Salt Lake chapter, and it was one of the most well-attended luncheons we've had. And I was struck by your story. Can you share a little bit about maybe where did you serve your mission? How many countries have you been to? And is this the worst? Is COVID-19 the worst thing you've ever seen?
Yeah. So I grew up in Latin America. I moved there when I was 4 years old. My dad worked for the church. He was my parents met at BYU. My dad is from Southern California. My mom is from Canada. They met and they stayed here in Utah for a few years, where I was born. My dad had a construction company. And in the early 80s, obviously the economy was going through some similar challenges that we are now. And my dad decided that he wanted to try to find something that was more stable. And he'd heard about the church was looking for people that had a background in construction that could go down to Latin America and help build churches. The church was growing very rapidly in this part of the world. And so my dad ended up applying for this job, and he got this job to move to the Dominican Republic, where the church was very, very young. And so in 1983, my family moved there. I was four, and that was really like my first memories were there. And I ended up spending my entire childhood and some of my early teenage years, and then a lot of my adult life in Latin America. So I think I can't remember exactly. I've lived in maybe like 10 different countries in Latin America. And it's a place that I feel very comfortable. It's like home to me almost. And, being in Latin America, crisis is not foreign to anyone that's spent time in Latin America, economic crisis and other kind of crises. And so my last business was in Brazil. And we dealt with a lot of uncertainty there as well. But there's nothing I've ever seen like this. I don't think anyone's ever seen something quite like this. The sharpness which we saw change happen, economic impact, unemployment impact. I mean, these were things that we've never seen previously. And it's hard to imagine a scenario where we could ever see it again other than another pandemic. And that's what's scary, is thinking about what happens when there's another one of these and how do we respond. And I think at some point we'll have to do a postmortem on this and ask tough questions around how we responded and how we could have done better. Did we need to act sooner? Did we need to act more aggressively? Did we need to do quarantines vertically instead of horizontally? I mean, there's like all sorts of questions that we can be asking. And I think every question is fair. And I honestly have no idea what the answers are, but the one thing that's becoming clear is that the economic crisis that has been self-inflicted is very, very damaging, that's obviously one of the hardest parts of this entire crisis. Is it's not just a health crisis, and I think eventually it'll turn into a mental health crisis, potentially homelessness crisis, and. There's going to be some real impact on the world due to this. So we'll see.
Yeah. And I mean, from your position as a business leader, you know, you sort of want as much in your control as possible, but you know, when it comes to, you know, the local governments, the federal government, they're sort of implementing these things, or they're rolling out these different plans that really you have no say in, right? No, not that you even want say in that, but how do you feel like you're sort of in this space where you don't have control right now, but you need to ride it out until you can get some sort of control over your mission and your plan for your business?
Yeah. You know, that's a great question, Kurt. Yeah. You know, I think this is interesting. It's an interesting way. We have to like reflect on ourselves as leaders. Because there's actually a great article I read about a week ago that I think answers this perfectly, which is, the article talked about the author interviewed 29 CEOs, everything from small CEOs that were doing like $2 million in revenue to companies that were doing over $500 million in revenue. And then he recorded all these interviews and he divided all these 29 CEOs to three different categories based on the words they were using in this interview. Hmm. And one of these categories was the fear-focused CEO. And this is a group that was the most emotional, the most concerned, and the most overwhelmed. The second group was the unfocused CEO. And this is a group that, you know, they were still uncertain about what to do. They were playing a wait and see kind of game. They were almost, you know, they were the most dismissive of the crisis. And then the third group was what he called the strategy focused CEO. And, you know, this is the group that was using, was focused really on growth and opportunity and focused on things that they had control of. The fear focused CEO was using, you know, that CEO used words like government and Trump 11 times more than the strategy focused group. Wow. They use words like coronavirus and COVID-19 seven times more than the strategy focus group. They used negative future pacing words like struggle, fear, hard, difficult, 13 times more than the strategy focused CEO. And honestly, when I read this article, I saw myself a little bit in that fear focused CEO. But I also saw myself in this strategy focused CEO. And for me, what it made me do is it made me rethink how I was thinking about this and how I was addressing it. You know, the strategy focused CEO was, they were nine times more likely to have shifted their product or strategy or services, their offerings. They were four times more likely to have already taken action and made changes to their team. They used words like action and opportunity, and used a lot of positive future pacing words. You know, so I think that's where I really started focusing. And I actually sent this article to my entire team. And I asked all of them to ask themselves the question about, are they being the fear-focused manager, director, VP, or are they being the strategy-focused, you know, VP, director, associate, whatever they are. And we wanted to focus on all of our energies on things that we could control. And we put together this Google spreadsheet that we're all using, and we came up with 60 ideas. And these are opportunities for us to either cut costs, to build the brand, to identify revenue opportunities. And we came up with some really, really fun ideas. And some of them we're already implementing. One of them, for example, is that we came up with this idea of like, why don't we raise money to help others get through this crisis? Yes, we're being impacted, but why don't we focus on others and not just ourselves? And so we put together this campaign called One Utah, hashtag One Utah. We created these t-shirts, and we're donating 100% of the proceeds of the shirt to Utah's response to COVID-19. And in the first 3 days, we sold thousands and thousands of these shirts. And so, we don't make any money from it, but we're building goodwill within the community. We're helping others along the way. And, you know, there's probably people showing up on our site that are maybe buying other things. And so it ends up being a win for us. And it's something that we're really excited about. And all of a sudden, the energy in our business changed. It went from feeling fearful and anxious and in a lot of uncertainty to feeling excited and creative. And we felt a lot of teamwork. And so, you know, that's I love that question about focusing on what we can control versus what we can't, because, you know, the reality is we can't control a lot of things right now, but in every organization, there's opportunity that didn't exist before, and we can take advantage of that.
And that's such a great answer. And that was my question as well. As you know, I think if we're all honest with ourselves right now, there is fear, there is fear of the unknown. This is something we've never experienced on any level. And everybody, whether it's for their own health, whether it's for, you know, their job, whatever it could be for, I think there is fear. And being successful is going to be, how do we, during this, maintain a positive focus? And I guess my second question for you, since this is the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast, is how do you stay moral and ethical at the grocery store?
Yeah, when you see there's only like one package of toilet paper left, right?
I think this is an interesting time when you think about moral and ethical leadership, right? This is where the rubber meets the road, and this is where leaders make their money, right? This is the time when you can really shine and think through those ethical, moral decisions. You know, for us, we had to close all of our retail stores, and it became pretty clear. At first, we told our retail team, hey, you know, we're going to continue to pay you for a couple weeks while we wait and see what happens. And a week into it, it became very clear to me, these stores will not be reopening in a week. They likely will not be reopening in a month. It might be 2 or 3 months before we have retail stores back open. And so, you know, we had some ethical decisions to make around how do we handle these employees that we care about. And, you know, these are part-time workers. These are people that a lot of them are college students, but a lot of them have been with us for like 3 years. So they've shown us a lot of loyalty and we care a lot about them. And at the same time, we simply cannot pay an entire team of people when we don't have revenue, all right? So these are really, really hard decisions. And I have to admit, the first week was hard. I lost 8 pounds. I have this weight track. Every day I weigh myself and my scale like connects with my phone and logs this my weight. I just like went like this, you know, for a whole week. And I went to bed with tears in my eyes a number of nights that week. It was a tough time. And the reality is that a lot of senior leadership, we're not going to be impacted that greatly. Our lives, I'm not going to lay myself off. My senior team is not going to get laid off. We're going to survive. It's the people that are most vulnerable that are the most highly impacted. It's the cleaning crews at hotels. It's the restaurant staff. It's the retail workers. So, and this just, it pains me. But I had this tough decision to make. And so once I realized what was going to happen, I decided this is the time for me to communicate with that team. I'm not going to wait another week to let them know. And so we connected with all of them and I talked to each of them and let them know how much I cared about them and that we wanted to give them additional time. During that 2 week period, they were coming into the office or the warehouse and kind of doing other odds and ends to kind of use their time. And we just promised them, hey, look, we're going to pay you as if you were working at the store and we'll find other work for you. And I just ended up telling them, look, you know, as much as we could use you, don't come in anymore. We would rather you spend that time looking for the next thing. We're going to give you several weeks of severance payments as much as we can. We wish we could do a lot more. But I'm here. I'm going to write a letter of recommendation for you. I'm here to mentor or coach you. If you're applying for a job, look and see if I know anyone at the company. I'm happy to reach out to my network. I had one of these retail employees call me today and tell me about a job that he's applying for. I know the CEO, so I'm going to send him a note. We're doing everything we can. And this team, they know I care about them. And while I'm sure none of them are happy that they don't have a job with us anymore, and neither are we, they do know that I care about them and I treated them fairly and I was transparent and honest. As soon as I knew about something, I was communicating that with them. I think this is a time where we need to, you know, we can exercise some of this moral leadership that I think so many BYU alum are great at.
Yeah. And I know just from getting to know you and other circumstances that you have really emphasized the relationships with your employees. And it's moments like this and crises like this where you can really, you know, turn to that, and that relationships are already established. You don't have to. It would be very hard if you're, day one of the crisis, start to build those relationships. But I know that you had those in place, and that really makes ethical leadership easy. Is when you've done that legwork beforehand, right?
Yeah, no, it's true. One thing that we were chatting about before we started this call, and actually, Jeremy Andrus, who's the CEO of Traeger,
is also BYU alum, and he's on my board, a great friend of mine and a mentor.
He'll be on with us next week.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, Jeremy's
fantastic. We're excited.
Yeah, he's really great. But one thing that he talked about last week was the fact that, like, he just feels like his communication with his team is more intentional than it's ever been. And I really feel the same way. Like, my communication with my team now is probably better than it was before, which I'm embarrassed by that. It's like, how did I let that happen? But it's true. Like, I'm like constantly sending updates, like every day, and I'm connecting individually with people. I'm reaching out to them and calling them and doing a video call with them and just, how are you doing? Like, give me an update. How are you feeling? And what challenges are you facing? And I'm finding that I'm using my time in actually a better way. I can't wait till we're all in the office together again. You know, I don't think that this is the best permanent solution, but I've learned a lot of lessons of leadership I've learned a lot about myself through this process. And so I think this has been a valuable experience for me.
Well, David, before we jumped on, you were alluding to my shirt, my do-good shirt here, which I love. And it's from Cotopaxi. Although the funny thing is they didn't have my size at your store, so I had to go on to Amazon to get it. But anyway, that's a different story. But what I'm wondering is, how can you do good in a time of social distancing?
Yeah. This is a really great question. First of all, I mentioned how Cotopaxi is doing this shirt, this One Utah shirt that's raising money for COVID. That's one way, right? The other thing is, you know, we've been trying to think of other ways that we can help our team. So some of it's sometimes internally focused, like how do we help each other? And some of it's outward focused. And inward focused for me, it's thinking about, okay, like how can I make sure that my team is the least impacted as possible? And so one of the ideas that I had was I knew that there were some businesses that were booming in a time like this. And so I thought of I knew that like 72 hour kits and these kind of emergency companies were booming. And so I remember that I talked to the CEO of a company called Uncharted Supply a few years ago. So I looked into my email, found his contact information. I called him last Saturday and just said, hey, like, you know, how are you doing? And he's like, things are crazy. Like we've never been busier. He's like, I don't have enough space to pack my stuff anymore. Our team's too small. We don't have enough people. And I was like, you know what? We've got space and we've got people ready to go to work. So last Thursday, so within a few days of our call, he had moved his stuff into our warehouse. Our team is now helping his team. And this is a win for him. It's a win for us. And we're going to do a collaboration with our brand where we're going to take some of his kits and we're going to bundle them with some of our bags. And so, you know, I think there's really creative ways to find ways to help others, to help your own team at the same time through creativity. Another thought is, we have all these missionaries coming home right now. In our stake, we have 22, it's going to be, I think, 26 missionaries that end up coming back early because of this crisis. And, Kurt and I have talked about this before, but I'm in a stake presidency right now. And so our stake presidents is having to deal with all these missionaries coming home. And it's just such a bittersweet moment, right? Where these families are so excited to see these kids and the kids are so excited to be home. At the same time, they want to be out on their mission still. And we created a document with 10 items that gave them things that they could be doing during their 14-day quarantines that they're on. And then however long they're here before they get reassigned. And it's everything from using social media to reconnect with people from your mission that you loved, people that you taught, people that you baptized. They're yours forever. Those are your converts forever. Those are your friends forever. Use this time to reconnect with them and to build those relationships. It was, you know, find time to do some family history. Find time to connect with other return missionaries that might be going through this, something similar. One of them was like, if you're feeling healthy after your quarantine, you know, go volunteer at the Utah Food Bank. And, you know, these are things that, like that one may be a little tough now with the recent changes that we just had and staying home. But at the same time, there are opportunities for us to even remotely find ways to connect with others and uplift others along the way.
That's awesome. I love just those ideas. And really, going back a few questions ago where you just sat down and you thought, how can we find the opportunities in this? And you made a list, and so many of these have come to the surface, not only in your business, but also in your stake and helping missionaries. Where would you send people if they do want to maybe be a part of the One Utah campaign? Where can they buy a shirt and help out?
Yeah, we'd love that. This is a really fun thing to see people, starting to rally around this, and I can't wait to start. We're starting to ship shirts out, I think today. And so it'll be really fun to see everyone wearing these shirts. And, what we loved about this message, the One Utah, was it was this like unifying message that brought people together. It wasn't focused on fear. It wasn't focused on like defensiveness. It was really focused on being together, getting through this. And we loved that. So if you go to cotopaxi.com/One Utah, you can see the shirts there, and we'd love for you to kind of rally around with the rest of the community and help us support this really important cause.
Davis, there were a couple of celebrities I thought I saw the other day that were wearing Cotopaxi shirts or jackets or something. Yeah. Did you see that by chance?
Yeah, I guess there was some Netflix movie with is it Mark Wahlberg? I don't know.
Oh, Mark Wahlberg, that's right. Yeah.
I don't watch enough TV or movies, but I haven't seen it yet, actually. But I don't know how. I probably got 20 or more text messages from friends. He was wearing a Cotopaxi jacket, and I guess his girlfriend in the movie or something also had one. It was a complete shock to me. I had no idea that was going to be happening.
Is that just surreal to see?
Yeah. So it was fun. Yeah.
Davis, I guess the only other question I wanted to ask you is. What words of encouragement do you have for people right now? What things do you think would be important for people to hear and kind of as we wrap up here?
Yeah, there's a quote that I love that I'll share. I read a book recently called The Book of Joy, and it's a really cool book with the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu, basically a conversation between them. And in this book, Archbishop Desmond Tutu says something that I really liked. He said, "Discovering more joy does not save us from the inevitability of hardship and heartbreak. In fact, we may cry more easily, but we will laugh more easily too. Yet as we discover more joy, we can face suffering in a way that enables rather than embitters. We have hardship without becoming hard. We have heartbreak without being broken." And, I've gained a lot of strength from that quote, just to understand that we have the gospel. And as difficult as things may be economically or in our family lives or work lives, we have joy in the gospel. We have joy in knowing Jesus Christ. And because of that, we can go through hardship without being hard. And we can have heartbreak without being broken, and so those are the kind of thoughts that I'm trying to rely on as we go through these difficult times, and just remember how fortunate we all are to live where we live, to live when we live, and to have the gospel in our lives.
Davis, thank you. We're so grateful for you for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to be with us and be with the BYU Management Society Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast. Thank you to each of our listeners. We will be back again next week with Jeremy and Kristen Andrus from Traeger Grills. Have a wonderful day.